Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with the panel, right. Along with the people that make up the panel. First and foremost, we have Ray Graff, who I owe a debt of gratitude to for filling in while I was away.
And so
I
thank nice you very to see much you back. For, so nice.
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
No, it was great.
No, I know you had a great time.
It was great.
Number three?
Okay, yeah, we're adjusting headphone volumes, and we apologize. The media project just got done recording, and that's what happened.
Right.
Alan and your other panelist, who you have yet to introduce.
I'm going to introduce him right now. It's our good friend Ira Fussfeld.
Hello. It was 25 minutes and 20 seconds of argument. In other words, it was a regular media project.
In other words, a precursor to this hour of argument.
So it's training, right?
We settled all the problems of A-Rod and NPR in a neat less than half an hour.
You know, I have to say, while vacation was very nice, when that story came down and I realized that I missed the discussion on the air, I was very upset.
Which one, the A-Rod or the NPR?
The NPR.
Yeah, well, it's quite a story.
I would have. Well, maybe we can rehash it.
Well, but there are a couple of things going on there. There really
I
are.
My soda. Go ahead.
You shouldn't be drinking that stuff, and you know you shouldn't.
I know, but I worry about you.
I don't worry.
All right, I know you worry. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead with what?
Oh, I thought you were going to rehash. I thought you said there were a couple of things that.
That were going on with the Nell departure.
No, you guys look at me as if I'm stupid. I got it right away. I just wasn't prepared, that's all.
All right.
Okay, here's what. You ready? Nell left for very good reasons.
Nell being the former president of
NPR.
Who left after...
2 years.
Vivian...
Letizia. No. Vivian...
Schiller.
There was also a Nell who was the cook at my summer camp, I believe. Yeah. So this is a different.
And
Nell.
Then there was Hang on the Bell, Nelly. Hang on the Bell.
Just
but
clarify.
Okay, but if,
you know, oddly enough, after all, I didn't miss it. I thought I would, and now I
okay.
Really
so
don't.
So Nell retires, getting a lot more money, obviously going to the National Geographic, one of the most important. Situations.
Well, that's a gig.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a great gig.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And he said that he didn't go to them. They came to him. It was unsolicited.
Sure.
And he goes. However, I think there probably is a little bit more to the story because there's a lot of tension between the member stations and the National Public Radio. Remembering that NPR got started because we needed somebody to collect the national news and the international news. And as Ira has pointed out just a little while ago, those two Morning Edition and All Things Considered are terribly important and are our most popular program, no question about it. However, NPR pays its people very well. They just moved into a big, spacious new building.
Across the country, in Los Angeles.
Well, no, in Washington.
Well, in Washington as well, yes. Yeah, but the operations moved.
Yeah, but the huge place, Joe, is in Washington, and they built a state-of-the-art huge thing. Anybody, whoever wants to come for a tour of WAMC knows that we make do with a very... That's why Ray always says spacious downtown
sure.
and you know headquarters.
Yeah.
Because to do radio, you really don't need huge lavish structure. You need a couple of microphones and a newsroom.
Sure.
I'm sure that the OSHA people would not want to come into our newsroom, right? You think?
Why would you do that? I have no idea why you would say that.
Okay, I take it back.
Too late.
The electrons are out there now.
Lord.
They're right up the road here. They'll be here before the program is over.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway. all of that considered, the NPR has a lot of problems with the member stations, and part of it is that because they keep spending money, we have to pay huge amounts of money to NPR. The tail is wagging the dog, and that is what our problem is. And there's a lot of tension because with the electronic revolution that we are seeing, NPR is basically competing, so they are driving our people as much as they can, away. They're asking for permission in some cases to come in and solicit our people for money. How are we going to pay them if we can't raise the money from our people that they go to directly? It's a mess. And I have a feeling Nell knew that.
But you know, what I think is interesting from my perspective as a print journalist is that the world has become aware, largely because we in print journalism have reported it, about the plight of print journalism and how newspapers are dinosaurs and newspapers are having all these financial difficulties, all of which, well, I'm not going to say the dinosaur is true, but the financial difficulties is true. It's more than that. It's the media landscape has changed in such a significant way that institutions such as NPR, which I believe have enjoyed increasing listenership,
yes, we do,
is still having a situation where they're running a $6 million deficit.
This year, where
CEOs are routinely moving on, whether or not, you know, it's great to say that Nell is moving to National Geographic. What a great job. And he's moving for the articles, not the pictures, by the way.
Hey, that's,
but,
you know.
But the fact is, if NPR was a more vibrant organization financially, perhaps he would not have been tempted to go to another organization. So,
well, in one hand, does he have in it for not being a vibrant organization?
Oh, I don't know. Alan would know a lot better than
I do.
Well,
no, I mean, I think what happens is that NPR spends too much money. I think it's that simple.
But you're the head of the organization for 2 years. You certainly have a hand in that, don't you?
Well, why do they hire you? They hire you so you go out and get more money. Now, Mrs. Kroc gave them, what, $200 million before him.
I just think there are a lot of there are a lot of smart people in media, both print and in broadcast, who are not – who have underestimated the landscape and who believe that by doing it the way we've always done it, the money will continue to come in the way it always has.
Right.
And so what I see from afar regarding NPR, because their listenership has gone up and because there seem to be more strength generally in the NPR brand, at least how people relate to it, that we'll be okay. Well, they're not okay because there are too many other places now for people to get news and information. And, that's got to – eventually the Piper is going to come calling.
Yeah.
And it took this guy 2 years apparently to find out that it's not working.
Well, maybe. We don't really know. But I can tell you one thing. The NPR tail is wagging the whole system dog. And what they really – I think are edging towards is that NPR will be its own thing and the member station. Listen, you're going to be able to get in. I've said it before. I'll say it again. You could get in your car in Albany and listen to WAMC all the way to California now. But you can get in your car and you'll be able to listen to NPR and get that NPR product. And they're trying to get you to go to their website all over. So there is this tension that exists between the member stations. NPR pays lip service to it, but they don't do much more than that.
Listen, you're the programmers and the radio experts, but I could foresee a time as perhaps as soon as several years from now where one of two things is going to happen. Either NPR is going to allow you to air its signature programs a la carte without paying a larger NPR fee, or you may well turn on a WAMC, Northeast Public Radio Network, and hear no NPR programming because you're producing so many good quality local programs here that it makes more sense for you to go that route.
Yeah, well, but Ira, how do we go out and compete now by doing international news?
No, you won't be able to. That's why I say you would have to find perhaps an a la carte way of doing that.
Well, it is a la carte. You are now paying a la carte for each program. In other words, you get choices. You get program choices that you can make. If you want NPR, but if you want that bad program they produce in the afternoon, then you get the bad program that they carry.
But you still pay a fee. For being an NPR member station.
We're approaching $1 million.
Yeah. So if you and the a la carte is on top of that.
No. Yeah, okay. There are two sort of things. You pay a program fee, and then you also, a membership fee. You pay your program fee. I mean, I don't even understand all of it, to be honest with you. I don't want to, but I can tell you now, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and if they had their way, it would be a lot more money.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that only newspapers are not the only ones wrestling with these.
Well, you have the same thing with AP, right?
Yeah, we, as do most organizations, including this one, subscribe to the Associated Press. They're very expensive. Their information is available in places other than our website and in our newspaper. And we're trying to get away from AP. We're spending less money. We're taking a lesser AP feed. And in our case, because we're part of a larger newspaper company, we're using stories from Denver and from New Haven and from Los Angeles that our sister newspapers are producing. So there is less concern on our part because, by the way, we really want to be more local anyway, and that because that's our niche. If you want to read about Iraq, you're going to buy the New York Times. And what am I paying the Associated Press for to give me Iraq stories when people pick up our newspaper to read about what's going on at Port Ewan?
But can't your listeners now go to AP's website?
Yes.
And read all of those stories right there, even though you're paying them to give you a feed.
That's right. So they're competing against us in a certain sense.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go with other stories of the day, including the Bradley Manning sentencing story. We welcome your input, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer. UnitedWayGCR.org. Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Evening classes starting in September for the Horticulture Certificate Program with courses in horticulture and garden design. Open to all experience levels, BerkshireBotanical.org. And the Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, a purveyor of over 100 handcrafted cheeses and pantry items featuring Tilldale Farm fresh grass-fed beef and pasture pork. TheCheeseTraveler.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel, Ira, Ray, Alan, Joe, and we welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. A military judge sentenced Bradley Manning on Wednesday to 35 years in prison for providing more than 700,000 government files to WikiLeaks, a gigantic leak that lifted the veil on American military and diplomatic activities around the world. The sentence is the longest ever handed down in a case involving a leak of the U.S. government information for the purpose of having the information reported to the public. Private Manning, and I just think it's important to point this out, is 25 years old. 25 years old, will be eligible for parole in about 7 years. This obviously has been coming under a lot of discussion and scrutiny, and I'm interested in what you all think about it. In the sense that the White House is taking a lot of fire on this. They have been somewhat mum in their commentary about it. And, I mean, we knew he was going to go in for a long time, right? It seems as though we knew that.
35-year sentence, eligibility for parole in 7 years, in part because of time served, is a relative pittance given the transgression.
The enormity.
Yeah,
enormity? Yeah, there we go.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the news this morning, as I was leaving the house this morning, is that he is planning on transgender surgery, Bradley Manning.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. This whole case to me, I feel like Billy Martin in the old beer commercials where he said, I feel strongly both ways, because it seems important to note that the material that he leaked is material that we should be knowing about what our government is doing in our name. And ordinarily, I would be cheering whistleblowers of this type and the press's ability to report this information. I feel a little bit more squeamish about it because he was in the military. And it just seems to me there is a distinction that I may just be making more of than I should. You know, unlike Snowden, who was a subcontractor, Edward Snowden.
So you'd make that distinction, Ira? You think there's a difference?
I think so. But you tell me. You obviously disagree.
No, I just don't know. I mean, I think that the government is very worried about protecting its secrets. I, on the other hand, am a big believer that you can't have a democracy unless you have information. That there's a great deal of information that Americans didn't know. So how can we possibly have democratic values and know to vote for and all the rest of it without having without having this information? I sometimes I think some of the guys who do this have to be Well, let's put it this way. Have to be unaware of what the consequences are for what they do. Now, if I'm a judge and I'm in a military court, and it's what we had here, I'm thinking, okay, my superiors are watching me. I'm a judge. I have to get promoted. I have to, I was obviously chosen for this for a reason. The government is asking for 60 to 90 years. The defense wants 25 years. And so I got to sort of be Solomon-like and split the baby. And that's what she did. Knowing full well that the left, center-left, which would usually support the president, is going to have some serious concerns about this. So there are a lot of political aspects to this that have to be considered.
I just wonder, when you're in the military and you're in charge of branches of the military and you make military decisions, there is a leap of faith that everybody, while they're wearing that uniform, is going to be not loyal to you and is going to be confidential.
And in World War II, there's no question you were fighting the Nazis and the Japanese at the time. That would have been very serious stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's so much going on here that we have to be aware of.
Yeah.
So, but I hear you.
And initially, right after the sentencing came out, talk started almost immediately about clemency and that the White House should pardon Manning. Manning's attorney obviously called for this as well.
They're not going to do that.
Well, no, of course not. Obviously, given the severity.
Well, the president is very concerned about these leaks, and he keeps talking about that.
But that brings back to where I wanted to bring you back to was the politics of this, because it has become a major issue, not just with Manning, but because of Snowden as well, for the president, and one that seems troublesome that doesn't go away.
Which part? The leaks themselves?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it. If I was still running my company, or Alan is running this company, and if you're making decisions here that a disgruntled employee that are secure decisions and private decisions for business or any other reason, you'd feel pretty damn unhappy if somebody went and broadcast them down to Rex's newspaper down the road here. So you can see why the president would be annoyed about it. But sometimes, as we've said with the Snowden case, there are things that the American people need to know about what's going on in their name, and therein lies the tension, the tug of war. Ray has got an argument.
It was so funny when you said disgruntled employee. I looked over at Ray and just had his head in his hands.
Well, he's known as Uncle Grumpy.
I'm listening to this and I'm thinking. Continue.
Well, no. You're thinking, but now it's time for saying.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you think? I mean, you know.
Well, I think that the simple fact of the matter is, number one, he'll likely be out in 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay?
Maybe less.
Maybe less than that. If his own defense was calling for 25 years and he's out in 10, then it seems to be a fairly equitable situation. The guy signed an oath. He broke the oath. So he's got to do there's got to be some penalty for that, don't you think?
And the penalty being as light as it was, if you can say 35, even whittled down to 10 is light, to what extent does that weaken the deterrence factor if others are considering leaking information?
That's a great point.
I mean, the fact that the word that I didn't hear recently, I think I did early on regarding the Manning case, was the word traitor. And now it seems more to be whistleblower than traitor.
Right.
But that said,
no, if it's from the right, it's going to be traitor, and it's from the center left,
yeah,
it's going to be.
But regardless, it seemed to me that that 99. I was surprised by the sentence, because it just seemed to me that it was going to be a 99-year sentence, because they're not going to let people
See,
off.
I would agree with you. If I'm the judge and I'm trying to think of where I am, and people do
less than 30 seconds.
Well, okay, then I give up.
Okay.
I rest my case.
And then I rest my case.
Hamilton Burger is through.
It's hands of the jury. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. We are talking about issues of the day. We love your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And let us talk about the newly released tapes on Richard Nixon. These, from what I understand, these should be the last of the tapes to be released by the Nixon Library, correct?
That's right.
That's right. It ended on July 18th before he was left office because they finally turned off the machines. Really, that was when it was revealed.
Finally turned off the machines.
Yeah.
So the new tapes of these secret tapes were released on Wednesday, the final ones to be made public. They shed new light on Nixon's efforts to really stanch the mushrooming scandal in the spring of 1973 of Watergate. On the same night, he pushed out top aides and gave his first speech on the episode. Nixon stayed up late making and taking a series of phone calls that planted the seeds for further cover-up. They're fascinating to listen to. I mean, really, really interesting to listen to. I must admit I did not listen to them in their entirety, only the clips that were somewhat random on the broadcast media. But it's fascinating stuff. So where do you think it is relevant today to have these tapes come out all these years later?
Oh, I just think it's a piece of history. I mean, you know, those of us of a certain age, it's hard to believe now it's been 40 years and there are a lot of people who are either too young or not even born who are listening right now who know Nixon only from the history books. But, you know, those of us who were in college during that period and Nixon was, for those of us in college, public enemy number one. He was just such a difficult person to look at and react to, his politics aside, it's just fascinating to hear it now. You know, you're listening in on history. It's just tremendous.
You hear Ronald Reagan calling him up, and you hear others calling him top people, Billy Graham, others, and saying this is your finest hour.
And Nixon complimenting Ronald Reagan on the wonderfully attractive wife that he has.
And then hanging up the phone and saying he wants to be president.
Yeah. It's just it's too bad for all of us who think this guy was not only stupid but the height of hubris to have been running these tapes during this period, thinking nobody would ever hear them and further convict him. You wish that every president in every Oval Office had a taping system 24 hours a day so that long after they're gone, we could go back and listen to them as part of history.
Didn't Johnson?
I think I've heard tapes of Johnson too, but I don't know how widespread it was.
That was during certain meetings, right?
Yeah,
it was like the secret system.
Yeah, I mean, we did hear tapes of him talking to Jackie Kennedy right after the assassination. Mm. So,
right.
I can tell you on a personal level, as I just said, this was a guy who, when those of us sitting around the dorms would see him on TV and we just want to throw darts at him. And now flash forward to about 15 years after he resigned, and he was starting to come back a bit in the public domain. And he was a speaker at an American Society of Newspaper Editors convention in Washington that I attended. And it was a presidential year, and he got up and without a single note on the platform, went through literally every one of the states and describing who, you know, the political circumstance in the state. And then after the speech ended and the meeting was broken up where he was standing around talking, it was like a magnet. I felt compelled to walk over as close as you guys are and said, here's the guy but that said, he was just fascinating.
Well, he wasn't stupid. I can tell you that a good deal of the environmental law, the decent things we have in this country, happened because of Richard Nixon. And so what happens is that, you know, we choose teams. We choose political teams. Right, Ira, you were in the dorm. I was a little older and looking at the guy on television and saying, well, I'm not on that team. He's a bad guy. But compared to some of the present climate change deniers in the same party and the others.
Well,
it was pretty good.
Much like they say about Reagan, who much of the Tea Party seems to hold up as the example, people like Reagan and Nixon could probably not get nominated by the Republicans now. They what seemed so radical of them all those years ago is not where the Republican Party is. Do you disagree?
I think that there is a real problem within the party. I think that they're arguing with each other and saying, look, if we're against Hispanics, if we're perceived as against Hispanics, we've lost a lot. If we're perceived as against women, we've lost an awful lot. So in the meantime, you got the Tea Partiers out there. In the short run, they are going to contest in every election, and they're probably going to win in primaries. Yet, there's a widespread knowledge in the Republican Party that they are committing suicide by proceeding the way that they are. And that tension is awful for them.
Well, they're going to have to show it, because if a Ted Cruz is nominated, they may as well just blow up the Republican Party and start all over again, because he's not going to win.
Okay, what's today's date?
Today is August 22nd
of the year,
in which Alan Chartok says Ted Cruz is not going to get nominated.
He has renounced his Canadian citizenship.
Well, there's a real question about that. If he was born in Canada, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the law says.
Maybe also Kelly Monteith can run, you know?
Yeah, no, he's not.
Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's too far out.
Which part? Kelly Monteith?
No.
Oh.
Cruz.
Cruz.
Welcome to the roundtable panel. And one of the other issues I want to talk, can we please talk about the story out of the governor of Maine?
Oh.
Wow. So the governor of Maine, and this, I find this fascinating. So the governor of Maine, apparently, two anonymous lawmakers within the state of Maine said they heard at a fundraiser. So I could only take that to mean that they're members of his own party, right? What, can't you assume that? I don't know.
Unless
they're anonymous, but yeah. they're at the fundraiser for the governor.
Well, it could be the same guy who videotaped Romney at the fundraiser.
Absolutely, but, you don't know, but yeah. but those weren't lawmakers. I mean, but anyway, okay. So they say that they were startled because they heard the governor of Maine say that President Obama, quote, hates white people. So the newspaper reports this. This goes viral. It is, and then there's a great brouhaha. The Republican governor says, who won with Tea Party support, says, I did not say that. I deny that. And all, you know, you guys are all about gossip. And then they start printing all of the things that this guy has said in the past. And I think to myself, well, all right, this certainly fits a pattern. I don't know. And I guess I ask this to you, Ira, of printing something that is hearsay. You don't have it on tape. You don't have it. You don't have it verified, but you have two prominent lawmakers saying that this is what the guy said.
That's enough for me. Two prominent lawmakers on the record.
Yeah,
why not? I mean, sure. Absolutely. I mean, let's listen. As you point out, this guy whose name escapes me has a reputation.
Governor LePage,
and he has proudly boasted that he is going to say things that are not generally said by mainstream politicians. He is a Tea Party person. He has a bad feeling, to say the least, about the Portland, Maine newspaper, which he infamously said he wished would be bombed by I can't remember what kind of planes or some attack. And then, of course, he said he was only joking. So you got the people of the good people of Maine have elected a guy, and there you are. And now hopefully they'll have the sense to say, wait a minute, is this the guy we want representing us?
Hey, Ray, you were just recently up in Maine.
Yes.
What do you make of this?
I didn't see one paper.
single-handedly killing the newspaper business.
I tell you, we didn't. The governor was not on the beach at the time, so I did not hear him say anything of the kind. And after that, I'm not saying much.
Just for those of you who may not know, Paul LePage has. Really made his, as Ira alluded to, has made a political career out of being blunt and saying what is on his mind and being a quote-unquote straight shooter. Part of that straight talk has him saying things like, as your governor, you're going to be seeing a lot of me on the front page saying, Governor LePage tells Obama to go to hell. When members of the NAACP and others complained shortly after he took office that his decision not to attend a ceremony honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was part of a negative pattern, he told reporters, tell them to kiss my butt. Last year, he compared the Internal Revenue Service to the Gestapo, saying the Holocaust was a horrific crime against humanity, and frankly, I would never want to see that repeated. Maybe the IRS is not quite so bad yet. He later apologized. He does not mince words about Maine's public school. Quote, if you want a good education, go to private schools. If you can't afford it, tough luck. He has called legislators idiots, berated one for having a wealthy background, and said of another that he has no brains and a black heart. Earlier this month, the governor was participating in a fighter jet simulation at Pratt & Whitney and was asked what he would like to do. And this is what I was talking about earlier. He said, I want to find the Portland Press Herald building and blow it up. He later said he was joking.
Well, clearly he was joking, right?
Okay, but at what point do you...
You don't want that from your national leaders, because there are enough crazy people out there who might not be joking and who don't know he's joking. I mean, I think it's great if any politician wants to be a straight shooter and says what's on his or her mind. But if that means that what is on his or her mind are the kinds of things that you just described, then let's just hope that there are not enough people in that state who read that and say, oh, yeah, we agree with him, and that there are more people who are going to say, God, is this what we elected? We get him out of here.
Well, I guess that's the point when you start talking about straight shooters, because we like that. We want to think we like that, right? Mm. We want to have our politicians be honest and have an open communications.
Sure.
I think early in the campaign in what was it, 2000, right? That's what we wanted. That's what we like John McCain. Why we like John McCain?
Well, sure. But John McCain, we wanted him to answer questions honestly and directly. And if his answers were, for want of a better word, out of the mainstream, well, okay, he was honest enough to describe his positions as out of the mainstream, and the mainstream is probably not going to elect him. So, you know, that's great. I would much rather have this guy say what's on his mind than to think it privately. But now that we know what's on his mind, he has to answer.
Ray,
for
did
it.
You want to ask a question?
No, I think he's got some personal filter issues, and you know, you could equate this with Anthony Weiner. You know, he has some personal filter issues. And so, you would say as a voter, you would say, well, do I want somebody who really can't filter himself to do things that shouldn't be in the public eye running the show? And well, so I would suspect that many a politician has some things that they think that are just off the cuff, and they really don't believe them, but they think of a snarky thing or a nasty thing. They don't say them. They don't do them. Yeah. So I think the voter has to decide, well, whether it's true or not, do I want somebody who can't filter?
Well, it's why I wanted to do these two stories together, because I thought the Nixon tapes, you know, you have this come out 40 years later and you hear all these things, and it's fascinating. As you say, it's fascinating. You wish that everybody had the recording stuff. But do you want to hear it 40 years later, or do you want to know right now that this governor of the state of Maine believes that the president hates white people?
No, I want to know right now. And
and
if this guy believes it and then, to his credit, quote unquote, is willing to say it in public, then he's got to answer for it.
One of the greatest presidents in the United States was Harry Truman. We didn't know it at the time because people got up in the movie theaters, I remember it quite well, and booed him. But he had an ability to say things straight from the heart that would get people very upset.
Yeah, but he took a position.
Yeah, he did.
and he stood behind the position. And
sure.
and I'm guessing, from my knowledge of history, we're not talking about positions such as, let's hope that there's somebody blows up the local newspaper, he's equating the Holocaust to the IRS.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just nonsense.
Yeah,
and if you know, beyond the fact that he doesn't have a filter, I don't even want people. What's going through his mind that he's thinking in those kinds of terms? I mean, that's not what people we want our people to be to represent us.
Well, and I think Ray makes a great point that if you have quote unquote filter issues, you know, you should just know better than saying something like that.
Don't go into politics. Get a radio show.
Wait a second, Ray. But on the contrary, he's the governor of a state, and he got to be the governor of the state
right.
by being unfiltered. And people like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that's scary, don't you think?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the question is, do they like it? Do they like the idea of it versus do they really like it? I mean, do they like when you have somebody say you're a sharp shooter, that you're a straight talker, and then suddenly when you start doing it and it's affecting the state, as one Democratic operative in the state said, look, we have gone from straight talk to becoming the butt of every joke on late night TV. Mm. So at what point does that become damaging to the state as a whole?
Well, I don't know,
Joe. I mean, you want to be a straight talker as a politician. Let's use a Tea Party person who is campaigning by saying the government is too large, we're spending too much money, we have to cut expenses, it may mean hurting social programs, all along those kinds of things. Those are important things to say because you know what this guy or woman stands for, and you will or will not vote for that person. But let's hope that those people are not also saying the Holocaust doesn't exist, or let's blow up the local newspaper. Now, that we want, now if they
that's
believe
scary.
It, and if they believe it, if they have filter issues, then they're smart enough not to say it publicly. But at least the only good news about this guy is he is saying it publicly, so people can make a decision about it. And you're right. I don't know if you raised it for this reason, but by saying it, Anthony Weiner, this is not a left or a right issue. There are guys on both sides.
I didn't say it for that reason.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have taken.
Yeah, well,
that,
take
fine. I thought of that.
And ride that horse in the winner's circle, Ray. I would. Let us talk a little bit about. I find the story fascinating, also because it puts us into a culture of things that we say that we are held accountable for, and not for, in this particular case, a political figure, but a celebrity. And Dr. Phil is in a lot of trouble. I put out a tweet
earlier
this week. He said, quote, "If a girl is drunk, is it okay to have sex with her?"
That was a question.
Question mark. Yes.
Right.
It was tweeted on Tuesday, I believe, at 5:49 p.m. Reply yes or no, # teens accused.
Was this set up for a show?
Well, that's right. Sure. This thing created a firestorm, and people on Twitter and elsewhere began to complain about this, suggesting that Dr. Phil, how could he possibly be asking such a ridiculous question as that, and making it sound like he's endorsing date rape or having sex with someone who's drunk? I can't believe that this wasn't anything other than him posing a question to get public reaction so he can talk about it on his program.
That's what it seems like.
And so what this says to me, among other things, is how hard it is to do something on Twitter in 140 characters where you can't put it on context and where in context and where even if it's a small minority of people read it and misinterpret it, that small minority could be in the hundreds. The 100 feedback tweets multiplying out there, it's like Topsy. And so he took the tweet down.
Well, that's the thing. And the taking the tweet down, and that's really the issue that I want to talk about, because by taking the tweet down, that is what has caused so much of the controversy. There is an editorial in the Washington Post. This is, "For half a decade, we've issued online playbooks to teenagers, warning them against posting tipsy photos on Facebook or texting compromising images by cell phone. It's common knowledge that nothing really disappears online. Enemies might cut, paste, and screen grab your worst mistakes into infamy." What's interesting is the way that this warning, "nothing disappears online," seems to have become law. This is an era of no takebacks, and those who attempt them are viewed as either idiots who don't understand the system or weasels who are trying to game it.
Yeah, well, that's probably right. And somebody didn't understand or didn't appreciate that taking it down doesn't mean it's going to go away. And I think had he thought it through, he not only not would have taken it down, but he would have elaborated on what the original post was all about. So by taking it down, he sort of seems like a weasel, and also seems like he was, you're right, I shouldn't have posted it.
Well, you make a good point, Ira, but there's another way to look at it, and that is this is all about advertising the program, as we've said, getting people to watch it. People are forgetting who this guy is. They say, okay, we got to go a little bit more red meat-ish in order to get it. And then in order to satisfy, well, I'm not done yet. In order to say that, all you have to do is say, okay, I understand the sensitivities, I'm taking it down.
So you believe he did the entire scenario up through and including taking it down was premeditated to generate attention?
I do.
Yeah. I guess that's a possibility, but I doubt it.
I don't think yeah. so. I mean, it seems to me, well, first of all, the fact that Dr. Phil, who was probably in the Cayman Islands at this point and had mm-hmm. no clue yeah. that this was being posted on a site, I mean, I think that is important to note in and of itself.
You know that how?
It said someone on his staff.
Right. Yeah. Most celebrities have their people.
But I mean, still, you're the president of the United States. You're responsible for everything under
well,
there.
Well, that's the point. Yeah. And then when you just delete it, it's still attributed to you. Yeah. It's still attributed. And whether the statement is, however it is viewed, as Ira rightly points out, in 140 characters, it's very tough. But you have to take it for what it is.
I mean, the fact is, the tweet, as Ray pointed out, it had a question mark at the end of it. Is this okay? Question mark. He didn't say it was okay. He didn't say, let's all go out tonight and do it.
That's right.
He is a TV psychologist. He plays one on TV. And it would seem obvious to most people that he was posing a question that was going to be a springboard for a program.
Yeah. Is there a hypersensitivity?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You cannot, you know, I
in that business, can you be hypersensitive?
You know,
in society at large, is there not a hypersensitivity? This was a question. This is a guy who does topics like this on his show all the time.
That's right.
Well, there's not only a hypersensitivity.
I don't like it either.
Is a large degree of ignorance out there, and people are jumping to conclusions without thinking them through. And it shows again how easy it is to create a firestorm on the internet. It's amazing how fast.
I mean, predictable.
Don't you think,
though,
Ira, that it's what he got what he wanted?
I don't know. I don't think this is an intended consequence. And
well,
I think it's awful.
No, I think it's negative. I think it's negative, and it comes off. I mean, it was the
more
lead item
will watch
on every show
Alan's
tonight.
Right about that. More
what
people,
did you say, Ray?
More people will watch. At
no,
least
he
in
meant
the short
the
term.
Alan. He wanted you to repeat the Alan is right part.
Yeah. Oh, Alan is right.
Watch. Yeah.
Just record this, Hopper. Yeah. Alan is right, and then we can just say it. You know,
Hopper, isn't that the dog from Columbia County?
And our engineer,
Barry Teasdale's dog.
Yeah. Well, he's passed.
Oh, he's passed.
Yes,
oh, it's been a long time. I'm sorry to hear that, Barry.
Yeah.
The four of us all have Twitter accounts. I don't know about you, but I'm very careful about what I post
or
retweet.
I haven't posted in years. I don't really post.
I follow New York Giants.
I like to retweet things that I think are funny, but I post when I'm on this program to promote it. But I'm very careful about opinions because it's so easy for it to be misconstrued. And there are a lot of times where I feel like I should. I feel applied, and then the newspaper training hits me where I say, "Wait a minute! I'm going to write it, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to edit it." And by then, that doesn't work on Twitter, which is of the moment.
You know, in now that you're moving sort of into a semi-retirement, mm-hmm. you could literally farm yourself out as a tweet editor and handle accounts for people and say, I'm going to edit these for you.
What a good idea, Rick.
You know? Yeah. New business.
Well, I'm willing to think about that.
Yeah.
But not until after this month because I sort of want to be on vacation this month.
I got a bird in my yard does it all the time.
Tweet?
He tweets, yes. Mm.
This and on that note,
people listen to National Public Radio for this kind of commentary.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, look at the time.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we have to end this particular conversation.
That was unfortunately.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Ira Fussbell, thank you very much. Always a pleasure, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We will be back tomorrow for another panel and look forward to what?
We will?
Yeah, we
okay.
will.
Okay, some of us will, right?
Some of you will.
And coming up next, we're going to talk to journalist Scott Anderson about his book, Warrants in Arabia. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.